Here we go. This is Emily Hutchison. Today is November 4, 2016. I'm a student at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm interviewing Pat Stevens-Williams. This interview is taking place at the 2016 SAF National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Monona Terrace Convention Center. This interview is sponsored by the Society of American Foresters and the University of Wisconsin Oral History Program and is part of the SAF Oral History Project. Will you tell me your name?
Pat Stevens-Williams.
And how do you spell your last name?
S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S, no hyphen, Williams.
Perfect. Okay, great. So to start off, can you tell me the story of how you became a forester?
It's kind of convoluted. You can look back to Girl Scouts probably being the biggest piece. That's probably the biggest influence. And then moving on, actually, even though I was interested in doing outdoor stuff and all of that, I actually came about it late because I was sent to a girls' college, and I lasted there a year and a half, and because I had no business being in a girls' liberal arts college. And so after that experience, I took some time off from school. I worked for the Youth Conservation Corps in Illinois, and a year of working for them basically made it a concrete decision to move forward something in that direction. And so I went back to school. Well, I spent 10 years as a medical office manager in between working for my dad. And then when he passed away, I had three children. I needed to go back to school, finish things up and everything. I wanted to get in. My strength is really, I'm human dimensions. And so my strength is in human dimensions and communications and the social side of forestry. And also a strong interest in the education of future foresters. And so at that time, there weren't human dimensions programs. And so you almost had to self-design. And so I was at Southern Illinois University and actually went into English because English allowed me to play in all fields. And so I was able to go to forestry classes as well as English classes, anthropology, psych, everything I needed for human dimensions. And then basically moved through there. And one of my forestry professors early on, Ken Chilman, said, he said, unless you get your forestry degree, you're just another damn English teacher. And so best advice I ever got. And so at that time, I kind of full-fledged got myself into forestry as well, although a computer glitch would not allow you to do they didn't have a PhD program in forestry at that time there, and I had kids and family and stuff, so I couldn't leave the area. And that was pre-online. And so I had to be in the PhD program in English and the master's program in forestry at the same time. And the computer program that they had wouldn't allow you to do that, be in two different levels at the same time. So what it ended up making me do is, for instance, like I had to do a dissertation in human dimensions and a master's thesis in forestry at the same time. So it was bizarre, but it was very interesting. And I was already well involved with SAF way before I got out of school, and actually was already a working group chair and everything before I ever got out. And so I got my PhD in 2001 and then went to UAM for 3 years. Very educational. And then I've been down at SFA ever since.
What is UAM?
University of Arkansas, Monticello.
And then what is SFA?
Stephen F. Austin State University in Nacogdoches, Texas.
And where did you grow up?
A couple of different places. Spent a couple of years in Oklahoma, several years in Atlanta, because my dad was in med school and all that. And then we moved up to Southern Illinois and spent several years up there.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you in Girl Scouts?
I'm a lifer.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a lifer.
So does that mean from
I'm still a registered Girl Scout.
Wow.
And will be for life.
Wow.
And was scout leader for my three older girls, and then my youngest, who is quite a bit younger than the rest of them. I went back in and was a leader with her for a year, and then decided I was wanted to do it on another level, that I was over the leader part, you know. So.
And then, did you get your PhD in English then?
Or? I did.
Okay.
With a focus in human dimensions. We had to write it up just the way. Yeah. So, I'm probably the first tenured English degree professor in a forestry college.
Yeah.
And I plan to be the first full professor as well.
Uh-huh.
So that's there have been a couple times where when we were going through SACS accreditation, I had to justify myself across campus, you know, to why I was able to teach in forestry with a PhD in English. So mm-hmm. So I actually keep that. It's been long enough now, most everybody's forgotten, and so I keep that kind of tucked away. I don't have anything but my forestry thing up and the fact that I'm a fellow in SAF and all that stuff.
Interesting.
So just kind of sweep it under the rug a little bit. Because it was a different time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. What sort of classes do you teach?
I teach human dimensions in recreation. You know, it still meets that recreation component that we have to have for SAF accreditation. I teach wilderness. I teach introduction to interpretation. And then I teach a lot of graduate courses because we have an online graduate program in Master Science in Resource Interpretation and Resource Communications. And so we have students from all over the country that are in pathways positions, you know, so remote areas, already working for federal agencies, that are trying to stay in the pathways position so that they can be, they basically are non-competitive, you know, at a non-competitive status when they get out for 3 months. They can automatically be rolled over into a permanent position. And so we have that program I teach a lot in. I teach research methods and media and graphics and communications and curriculum-based stuff. So
cool.
So it's fun.
Yeah. Okay, so
I'm not used to talking about myself. I'm like, I'm always like, what do you do? What are your interests? How can we help you reach yours?
So let's see. We've covered your career a little bit. Unless there's anything else you want to add about where you've worked.
No, we're good.
Okay. how have you been involved in SAF?
I've been involved with SAF since I was a student at SIU, and really got involved because I wanted to come to the conventions, and the unit was a little bit undermotivated at that time, and so I was like, okay, we're going. So kind of took it, you know, the bull by the horns and started getting us to go every year. And I was, you know, already a grad student, so I was teaching environmental ed and there and everything, so I kind of had a little bit of power to be able to get that. So we started coming to the national conventions, and as a matter of fact, the very first convention we went to as students, it was four girls and all of our kids. And we took a van to Portland, Maine for that one. And it was an unbelievable trip, unbelievable challenging. I wasn't in charge of this part, but we rented a van that already had 150,000 miles on it. I had no idea, you know. And so it broke down four times
on
the way out there and back. And so as a matter of fact, the last day it broke down, we were in Columbus, Ohio, and basically, the U-joint went out, and it just, drive shaft dropped out on the highway. And so at that time, the people came and got us. But meanwhile, you know, it's us and all of our kids. And, you know, we were just bound and determined we needed to go. We were single moms, and so we went.
Wow.
And I think I've missed two since then. I missed Alaska and Hawaii. And but I've come every year since then. But I got involved early, and I got involved with the working groups early, with the education piece, and did that. I've been on Forest, and the FSTB board was awesome. That was an awesome experience. I was able to start a human dimensions group, you know, just some pieces like that. But it's never been just me. There's been a group of us that have been working about, you know, communications and human dimensions pieces. And when we first started in here, it'd be, depending on the year, somebody would be pro, you know, oh yeah, let's, you know, the broad range of forestry. And then on the other side, the next year it'd be somebody would be like, oh, you have to be hardcore dirt forester to be a member, you know. And so it was really interesting to watch those dynamics. But at any time was the group not welcoming to students and, you know, to bring us on board. So I try to keep that in mind and mentor those that are coming up as well. So that's how I got started.
That's great. Okay, so now we're into the diversity questions. This project was developed to understand people's perceptions of diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession. How has your ethnicity, cultural background, or gender influenced your career?
Well, I kind of have a double whammy, so with being human dimensions and female. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's kind of hard to tell which is, you know, which part of it they're uncomfortable with sometimes. It really affected things in Arkansas. And it's usually a single person that causes you issues. But there, you know, the person that was problematic there, there were 11 of us that he harassed over his tenure, and we all bailed. So and it wasn't all female. So he said it was, you know, hard to tell whether it was a gender issue. Although when I first took the job there, and because I came out with a PhD in English, I needed to find a starter school, you know, a starter job that somebody in forestry said will take you. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple of offers to go work for the state in Illinois to start the human dimensions and wildlife stuff up there. But it was right after I'd gotten the offer from UAM, and I had committed myself. And so I'm always about, you know, if you say, you give them your word that you follow through. So I moved to Arkansas. And the first thing that the guy did there, that they had been under SAF accreditation, and their recommendation was the fact that they had no diversity on their faculty. And so I hadn't been there too long, and the letter that was going to go to SAF, it was circulated around for everybody's approval, and it said, we have satisfied the diversity issue by hiring a female and a Muslim that teach human dimensions and policy. It didn't even say we've hired a human dimensions and policy person who also happened to be, you know, it was, and so that was kind of the writing on the wall right there. And that affected the experience in Arkansas a lot. But like I said, it was not just about being female, and it was not just about human dimensions. This guy just had issues with a lot of people. And it carried over to SFA, because the guy who was at SFA had been best friends and taught at UAM. And so there was some, you know, stuff that I had to clear in moving that. And so Those have been issues, and there are still some issues out there, and we know it. And I actually just did a presentation on wildland firefighters, where we did a survey looking at issues, harassment and gender discrimination. It exists. It's there. It's hard to determine at what level, you know, because it's all about perception and tolerance and all of that. That said, if you wallow in it, you are going to self-destruct. So you have to move on. You have to choose which white horse you're going to get up on. For instance, like at UAM, it was clear that the provost wasn't going to support me, and he actually said, "So after all of this is said and done, do you want to? Are you still going to want to work for this guy?" And I was like, "Okay, so it's obvious you're not even going to consider removing him." And so those types of things can really, really get at you. but it can be a female as well as a male, because I'm sure you've run into it from time to time. I don't think men can be near as wicked as some female situations can be, mm-hmm. you know. So, you know, we have to watch that. And so it's more about a couple of things. First of all, we need to, for your own self-safety, you have to move on and get past it. Because if you don't, you'll self-destruct, nor can you make a difference in the society. You can say, okay, you know, I can implode right here, or I can quit. But if you really want to make change, you're going to have to tolerate a little bit of that to move on, or learn to be tolerant, a little bit tolerant, you know. And we are hanging out with a bunch of guys, no offense, but, you know. And so it's about needing to train people to behave like good humans to each other. That's what it is. And no matter how much we mandate or anything like that, you can't mandate good manners, you can't mandate morality, you can't mandate, you know, a level of tolerance that they don't even know exist. And so it's got to be something that we build from the bottom up for awareness, mm-hmm. and that we should have started with, well, the moms, as moms and dads, we should have trained them before they ever got there. But you know, when it's usually at the university age that we finally get a hold of them, mm-hmm. and so then that's where we need to work on tolerance and stuff. But the top down stuff that you have to do, that creates a lot of issues, because then it means that we have to work 5 times as hard, because half the people out there think that we got our jobs because of a mandate, mm-hmm. you know. And you know, and the other thing that I tell people is that you need to think of yourself as a natural resource professional first, and then everything else is under that. Go in there, do your job, and everybody set an example, and then the rest of the stuff, you know. Then you got to worry about that, but don't think about yourself as a female first, or, you know, or your sexual orientation first, or anything like that, because honestly, you know, that's all, that stuff is more private. Mm-hmm. But doing your job, that's what you're supposed to be doing. But like I said, the main thing is if you quit the game, you've given up what you loved, and you haven't made a difference in the world. So. Soapbox, sorry.
That's okay. That's good.
Did I answer the next four questions?
I don't think so. So, well, maybe we included some of five. I wonder, what do you think about the role of regional experiences, if that affects your career or how you think about forestry being in Arkansas or Texas, or who you see?
You mean, is it different? Is that what we're trying to drive?
Yeah,
I'm trying to understand.
So.
What
Well, so a lot of other people I've interviewed have worked in Montana, mm-hmm. and Idaho and the North, or Minnesota. And I'm wondering what you see, maybe what you have seen.
There's differences and there's similarities, you know. And like I said, UAM was a real education. But it was also clear that I was not supposed to be there. You know, it's one of those things where, like, you know, like I signed on my house and the lightning struck it on the way home. My kids were almost killed in a car accident 3 weeks after we were there. I had my truck stolen and wrecked. You know, so, you know, those signs that says, excuse me, you should move on. But it was very different there. But very much an education into the deep depths of Southern forestry. There were some things there too. You know, it's more like looking at the students. It's not so much the professionals already working in the job. It's working with the students and what they bring that you have to deal with. You know, like I'm sitting in computer lab one day, and the guy behind me, and he's straight A student, really nice young man, and he's talking about how they were jumping out and whopping raccoons at night just for the fun of it, you know. And he was talking about being out at the deer lease and his dad tying cats together and throwing them over the clothesline for entertainment, you know. So if you have parents and everything, particularly in schools like UAM, is primarily local, you know, and so like SFA, not so much. We have, you know, a lot of urban. We have some people from other states coming in. They've been some places versus like UAM, where a lot of people hadn't even been out of Arkansas, you know, and so it's more about what their experiences were. So in my role as an educator, what I have to work with, what clay do I have to work with? So, you know, it's really having to get in there and understand what's going on, how the public works, what's their level of experiences and everything, and then trying to meet themselves on their level and work with something that that they'd have no idea is may not be acceptable somewhere else. Mm-hmm. They don't see any sort of issue with it at all. It's just the way they've been raised, mm-hmm. the way their parents have been raised. And so I think that's more than anything. It's one of the things that's driven me towards transformative experience for students. Like every summer I try to take students out to Yellowstone and the Tetons and to get them out there so they can look at stakeholder stuff, see some differences, you know, and I always tell them to, you got to go out because learning the public is part of the education. Mm-hmm. And so so I really try to get students out to see various things so that they know that there's differences. Because once it's part of knowing that there are differences that help you create a better tolerance level for, you know, I'm not talking about like tolerance level for evil things or things that shouldn't be done, but just basic things that really might not have been intentionally offensive or something. It's just different. Mm-hmm. And like it was pointed out at the diversity thing yesterday, that they were talking about they have a thing about who can collect the most business cards. And it was pointed out that, for instance, in China and India and a couple of other places, that a business card is a gift. And so it's never to be just put in your pocket. It is to be put into like a wallet or a billfold or something like that. And it's not one of those things that, the way that we hand out stuff. So it's things like that, just knowing that those exist, that make you conscious about how you're treating other people. And that is what it's all about, is being conscious of how you treat other people. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, agreed. In this, I think I want to go back and ask you about what your experience at the Youth Conservation Corps was like.
Mm-hmm. It was a blast. That's in hindsight, we were talking about this last night too with some of the at the alumni reception and everything. That they almost didn't hire me, because then I was like a real skinny little young woman, and the guy several months later said, you know, I almost didn't hire you because I didn't think you could do the work. And you know, and so that kind of thing, you know, when you start talking about diversity, all those things that you like just push to the back kind of bubble up. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a blast. It was I was in Southern Illinois, and it was one of the years where we had floods. And so you're talking about me and a bunch of other college students and high school students that are off for the summer, going around doing flood cleanup. We planted thousands of trees. That was the summer I learned how to run a chainsaw. I learned how to drive a dump truck. I learned how to lay out concrete pads, how to build platforms, build sidewalks, you know, and I'm getting goosebumps. It was just so cool. Now we did paint a lot of latrines and grills and stuff too, but just, it was fabulous. It was a wonderful experience, and that's, you know, it's kind of like the SCA experience type thing. And those types of things are really a good way to capture that youth group and get them involved in doing things. I quit when my supervisor divided us up into two groups, and he was a real flirt, and there was another guy that was one of the students that he liked to act like he was really cool and a flirt too, and they promoted him to be the team leader, And I got bypassed, even though I was already keeping all the records and doing all of that stuff. And so I was like, okay, I'm done. And so I quit, you know, but whatever. Yeah. So we all have those experiences in the background. We just learn how to, you know, what to do with them better. You know, at that time, you know, and when they asked me why I quit, you know, I said, oh, well, you know, I just had the flu and I'm just not going to come back. You know, I should have said, you know, this is what's happened. Mm-hmm. Somebody's been promoted over me, even though he's not, you know, shouldn't be promoted over me. And this guy that is the supervisor of all of this is messing around with all these college girls, and even though we was married, and it just was wrong, you know. And so anyway.
You mentioned SEA. What is that?
It's the Student Conservation Association.
Okay.
And it is a wonderful organization that works with all the federal agencies and a lot of other groups as well. And you can go in and apply and fill out your application, all that, and they know you're a student. They know you're not going to know all of these things, but you can go and apply, and it's a lot of the way that they fill their positions, particularly in summer for seasonal employees. And so you can go work for the Forest Service for the summer, or you can go work for Park Service, and like I said, a whole variety of things that you know, all the jobs that they can possibly fill with a seasonal person, they can fill through the SCA. It's cheap labor, but they give you a place to live. They pay for you to get there and back. They give you a stipend for your food. They give you an AmeriCorps stipend at the end to go towards school. You know, so it is an awesome place for students to start when they're looking for internships and everything. And lots of times you'll go out, it's a way for them to kind of try you on, because you can go out and work for a summer, and then you know, if you work out and you do well and you like it as well, then they'll offer to hire you back for the following year, and as one of their employees, you know, as a seasonal employee. So it's a real good way to get your foot through the door.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Okay, so I think that we've already covered what are your thoughts about diversity and inclusion in the forestry profession, but maybe you could talk a little more about what diversity means to you.
That's a tough one. Because it's just basically differences, you know, differences of, but it's everything from differences of opinion to differences of skin color to differences of cultural background, you know, and you know, you can go down the block and have diversity, you know. And so that's, I think diversity is all differences.
And do you think that your cultural, or how has your cultural background or gender helped or hindered your job?
Well, you've heard about the hindrances.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, I'm one of those that like tries not to separate out, you know. That's that. I've always been a human being first, and then it's like I just want to do my job. I think it's helped in understanding. I hope it has not helped pave my way in any way possible.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's helped has helped me do my job better, and to help others behind me do their jobs, and that's probably it. You know, the experiences have helped me help others.
Great. And what role do you think SAF can play in enhancing diversity and inclusion?
I think it can do a lot, and I can see where I'm headed down that road. The road that I've always tried to kind of like fly under the radar on, because once again, job first, you know, and then the rest of it later. But Rachel Reyna and I are good friends, and, you know, and she's the head of the diversity thing and stuff. And so we've been talking a lot over the last few days, and I think as long as we don't try to top down force it, I think our role, because we're not an entity, we're an organization. And so because we're not like an agency or something, a mandate or policy or something like that is not going to be as helpful as some other ways that we could approach things. I think that that our strength is in enhancing training opportunities, and it may be forced training opportunities, you know, that we might like go back to having leadership clinics and stuff like we used to. Because it's just like when we had the diversity thing, I didn't get to go to the morning one. This afternoon when we did it, there's probably 20 people in there. Really? And all of us that are in there are the ones that are interested, mm-hmm. you know, or presenting. And so, you know, so the ones that need it most are not going to come to a diversity training. And so it has to be snuck in other places. So it's like, okay, let's do, you know, let's do 18 minutes of forest ecology and 2 minutes of diversity training, mm-hmm. you know. So it has to be mixed in something that in some other way where they really want what that other thing is. And then we get them by doing what they, you know, what they really need, you know, while we have that captive audience. I think SAF can play a critical role in this. And I have to say, it has been absolutely essential and critical in my career. I cannot imagine having had my career without the help and opportunities and support that I've had through SAF. And so I hope that we continue those. But I think we have to be cautious. One of the things that I was talking about with one of the Forest Service ladies in there, she's a psychologist actually for the Forest Service type of thing, because she was talking about polarization, how as we start isolating groups out again, then we're creating more segregation rather than a group effort. You know, so we need to gather around a cause and work with people that way rather than, I think, you know, really separating them out. But like I said, to really answer your question, I think we have a critical role and a critical responsibility to play in it. It's just hard to figure out exactly how to play that game.
So there used to be leadership meeting or
we used to have leadership workshops. They would try to get people who had just come in as national leaders, but also as state leaders that you could go. But it got kind of pricey to do, and you know, SAF picked up a lot of the cost, and then it was like $400, and then they had scholarships and stuff like that. But they'd have it at wonderful places, and we would do like the Myers-Briggs type indicator and how to get along with people and stuff like that. And that was really cool, you know. That's and it was tied with how to be a leader at SAF, how to do the job that you've taken on at SAF. But
I love the Myers-Briggs sort of tests.
I'm doing it on my students now. I'm tracking them. I just finally this semester I've got been doing it long enough so that the guys that are done with their plans and graduating in December, that I'll have a whole set so I'll know who left, who's still here, you know, and all that. Because I'm really into the communications aspect. So I firmly believe that the reason that we are so poor at communications is because it's just not our thing, that we're mainly introverts. We have a whole lot of other really good traits, but we're not real comfortable outside of our element, you mm-hmm. know, and so in communicating with people. So I'm trying to prove that.
That's great. Okay, so where do you see the profession of forestry going in the next 20 to 100 years?
20 to 100, that's a big bunch. I think our role and responsibility becomes more and more critical to the health of the earth. So we have got to, we're broadening well. I mean, we really are compared to, you know, if you go back and you look at in the 1950s, where they defined forestry, it was like the definition was two lines long. Last time they defined it in the 80s in the Dictionary of Forestry, it's 15 lines long. You know, so, I mean, it just gets bigger and bigger. And so that's a good thing as we get knowledge and everything, but we still have a lot of work to do on the public sector, you know, and being and learning how to work with the public sector and being the go-to people to work with. Well, we need water quality and air quality people and all that stuff, but just, you know, I dump it all under forestry because it all works together, that we need to play a much more prominent goal and role working with the public to helping them understand things in a way so that they can help us not, like, toast this place.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so we've covered all the important questions. Maybe I'll ask just one or two of the additional questions. And so how has the what has been the most rewarding aspect of your career?
Hanging out with these guys. It really has. Helping the next generation come up. That's, you know, if you looked at something personal, I had two goals associated with SAF, and actually two career goals. I mean, I cannot express to you how important SAF is to me. It's like the Girl Scouts, you know, it is. And to get to be a faculty advisor, to get to that point, and that has been a blast. And I've done it three schools now, and so it's just been awesome. And then the other thing was to get recognized as a fellow, which I thought would never happen. Female, human dimensions, not gonna happen. And it did, and it was out of a recommendation of some really great guys that are hardcore foresters that I would have never expected that kind of support, and I was very touched, you know. So for personal things, and like I said, I usually like to fly under the radar. I like to facilitate other people's stuff, so. It's more about the students than anything else, but that's been the most rewarding part of my profession is to help students find where they want to go, you know, to find what their love is, to find where their heart's going to be, and those students that are like vacillating, and it's like, okay, let's find your heart, mm-hmm. and then help you get there, and so that's it.
And then, what advice would you give a new student or a new forester?
Stick to it. You know, find your heart, find your niche. You know, that's we have a lot of variety, and you know, the diversity stuff is, I mean, look at the agencies, you know, like they all have a different personality, and so it's the same thing. It's like, find your niche, find your people, and we'll all cross paths together, but you know, just find where your place is and pass it on to others. That's, you know, we have a responsibility to be good people, or try to be good people. It's always a struggle, you know, but try to be good people. And if you screw it up one day, get up the next day, look in the mirror and go, okay, we're at it again.
Okay, then to finish up, there's just a few demographic questions. What year were you born?
55.
And what gender do you identify as?
Female.
And what is your ethnic, racial, or cultural background?
White Caucasian. 6% Native American, but not very much.
And then would you like to add anything that we haven't covered about forestry, SAF, or diversity?
Nothing other than, and they already know this and stuff, but any way that I can possibly help, I'll be more than happy to, you know, with research or frontline stuff or mentorship, any of those things. Proficient in quantitative and qualitative research, so either one or both, you know, but anyway, I can help try to figure out this puzzle. I seem to be being pushed in this direction. get, you know, that's like I said, I've always tried to fly under the radar and just do my job, but there's been a lot of, you know, indications that I need to do some stuff along this line. And I'm very conscious of you guys coming up behind me. And, you know, we have two more female faculty. When I was the only female faculty member, or the other female faculty member was married to our biometrician, you know, so it wasn't that big a deal, you know, as far as, because the essential things were that, you know, I had three kids to raise. I was going to take whatever it took to keep the job and the health insurance and all that stuff. It, you know, I didn't have another alternative. I couldn't afford not to do that. But so some of the things that may have happened along the way, or, you know, I might have raised a flag and said, you know, hey, guys, we need to think about this, was probably pretty quiet about. Although I'm a pretty tolerant person, I got four brothers, you know. And so, but we have two younger female faculty members coming up behind me now. And so I feel a responsibility to try to help them not experience some of the things that some of us older gals experienced moving through. So
that's great. Well, thank you so much for
well, you're welcome
being interviewed. I'm gonna stop the recording.